The issue of immigration was hit hard on the campaign trail in the weeks leading up to the midterm election. To separate the facts from the fiction and to understand how this issue impacts our country and our state, we're joined by Lisa Koop. She's an immigration attorney, teaches law at Notre Dame, and she's joined us before to discuss this very topic. Lisa Koop, welcome back to WBOI Presents.
Thanks for having me.
Can you tell the listeners, just kind of remind us a little bit of the work that you do and what it looks like right now?
Sure. So I work for the National Immigrant Justice Center, which is based in Chicago but has a satellite office here in Goshen, Indiana, where we represent non-citizens in their legal proceedings. So that might be asylum cases or people applying for citizenship or DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or people in need of deportation defense. And then I also work with law students at Notre Dame Law School who, through a practicum program, represent non-citizens, usually from northern Indiana, in their immigration proceedings.
We have talked before about some of the issues like family separation and that kind of increase in harsher immigration rhetoric. But what we saw in the run-up to the election was a little bit different. Can you talk about that a little bit, about what we were hearing, particularly from the White House, about immigrants at this time?
Sure. I mean, I think it was in some ways more of the same, an escalation of the narrative that immigrants are to be feared, that refugees, asylum seekers, rather than exercising their rights under domestic and international law to seek protection in the United States, were in fact invading our country, when, you know, there really wasn't evidence to support those assertions. So we saw the administration really trying to focus on the caravan, the group of asylum seekers, men, women, children, families from Central America who are making their way north in the hopes of seeking asylum protection in the United States, and really casting them as an enemy force coming towards us. And there was a real escalation of really rhetoric around that was intended to stoke fears and really push Americans to see non-citizens, to see immigrants and asylum seekers as an other to be feared, as opposed to a group of people to whom we should extend compassion and offer due process and provide an opportunity to pursue their claims for protection. And then the other prong of the immigration attack in the lead up to the elections was this assertion that the president could unilaterally roll back birthright citizenship, which again just felt like very much a political stunt intended to get us all talking about that as opposed to more substantive issues. You know, really it was intended to divide Americans on immigration issues, and, you know, rather than have real conversations about actual issues that face us as a country.
When you talk about this caravan of immigrants, is that something that is abnormal? Is that something that has happened before? Is that something that's happened in prior administrations? What's kind of the impetus for that? Where does it come from? And what usually happens with it?
This isn't the first time that non-citizens, asylum seekers, immigrants from Central America have joined together to make the trip as a group. And I think it's also really important to note at the outset of this conversation that our borders, the unauthorized border crossings, are at near all-time lows. We haven't seen numbers this low in decades. So the notion that there are people flooding across the borders is just false, and verifiably so. People can pull the numbers of border apprehensions and see that the numbers are incredibly low. And so appropriating more resources to reinforce the border is just, you know, throwing money at a problem that doesn't exist. But it is true that groups of immigrants join together to make the journey. Sometimes it's a pooling of resources. It's for protection. We've certainly had many clients who, on the journey, have been victimized by cartels in Mexico, women who have experienced sexual abuse traveling alone or traveling with their children, children who have been kidnapped by the cartels, forced into labor situations, all kinds of really nasty stuff that happens to people when they're extremely vulnerable and making this trip from one terrible situation through another, trying to get to a place where they can seek protection. So, you know, it's not surprising that groups of people come together for protection in order to make the trip. But I think it's been interpreted as something that is threatening as opposed to something that, you know, makes practical sense for the families that are a part of this.
When they are coming, they are seeking asylum. They have to approach a border, correct, in order to do that?
Our law, first of all, not everybody is an asylum seeker. Not everybody is going to win protection and be allowed to permanently stay in the United States. Asylum is protection that's reserved for people who have been persecuted in the past or people that fear persecution in the future. And there's a pretty rigorous legal standard that you have to meet in order to win that protection. So just by showing up at the border doesn't mean that you're automatically given asylum and allowed to stay in the United States indefinitely. But the process of seeking asylum can be initiated a number of different ways. And one way is by presenting yourself at a port of entry, which is, you know, a legal way to say, hey, I'm here, I'd like permission to enter and seek asylum. There are other individuals who enter the United States through other ways, who cross the desert, who come across the river, either because geographically they're not close to a port of entry, they're not aware that they, that ports of entry are one option or a way to come into the United States, or simply they've heard that at the borders people are being turned away at the ports of entry and told, you know, America's full, you're not allowed to apply here. So people sometimes enter the United States through other ways. Those people are also entitled to seek asylum. There is no law that says you can only apply for asylum if you come through a port of entry. Asylum and refugee protection is available to people regardless of how they find themselves in the United States. Now, coming in, you know, across the desert and over a river increases the likelihood that people will spend time in detention, you know, so there are other practical reasons why it's advantageous to enter at a port of entry, but that's not the only way to seek asylum.
You mentioned earlier this idea of birthright citizenship, and there was some discussion about 2 weeks before the election that they had floated the idea that they could change the Constitution or pass a law or make an executive order that would allow or disallow people from having their children become American citizens at birth within the boundaries of America. Explain a little bit about where that amendment came from and what the likelihood would be of it going away.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's not a serious academic debate about whether or not birthright citizenship is provided for in the Constitution. The 14th Amendment says precisely that, you know, people who are born in the United States are American citizens by virtue of having been born here. So, you know, this notion that can somehow be summarily changed through an executive order is really just intended to be a political tool, a political device to divide people. It's not a legally sound or meritorious argument. But it certainly has gotten us all talking about it, and people have described it as race baiting, as something that, you know, was really just intended to stoke the fires of discord leading up to the election. And it did, although now that we're on the other side of the midterms, it doesn't look like those sorts of arguments and that level of fear-mongering gained the sort of traction that maybe the administration hoped it would. So it'll be really interesting to see where they go with those assertions if they stay the course and continue to make these sorts of specious arguments or kind of recognize that most Americans aren't in favor of the type of immigration policies, the really radical proposals that we're seeing come out of the White House.
We're having this conversation the morning after the election, and, you know, so things changed. And as kind of has been typical with the news in the last few years, is we have things happen very quickly. What was said on Monday is sometimes irrelevant by Wednesday. So, you know, we're here on Wednesday, and the Democrats have taken control of the House of Representatives. They have not made any gains and lost a little ground in the Senate, but there is a little bit more now of a counterweight to the Trump administration. How would a Democratic-controlled House be able to impact some or check some of these impulses of this administration?
I mean, first of all, I guess we need to be careful about not over-extrapolating from, you know, what happened last night. It's too early to tell. You know, was this a referendum on immigration? What were the driving forces that pushed voters to make the decisions that they did. I think it is really interesting and encouraging that someone like Kris Kobach, who is running for governor in Kansas, didn't prevail, and his platform was largely centered around non-citizens voting and cracking down on immigration in pretty much every way imaginable. So that's encouraging. You know, having the Democrats in charge of the House means that there's, you know, maybe a few more checks and balances in place. It doesn't mean that we're going to see comprehensive immigration reform. It doesn't even necessarily mean that we're going to see DACA protected. But I think there will be more meaningful conversations. It certainly gives, you know, both parties leverage on these issues. And hopefully it means that people can start having real conversations about what adjustments actually can and should be made to our immigration laws, you know, to put us in a place that's more reflective of our American values.
Lisa, thank you so much for coming by WBOI Presents.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure being here.